It's Tuesday, January 5th, and we've done it, folks. The NFL postseason is here, 256 games down, and it waited to the very end of the NFL season to get us the NFC East winner. We'll talk about it all. The Chiefs, I might be a little bit worried, Gabe. We'll get into that. But first, how are you? Happy New Year. And we're at the playoffs. We made it. I can't believe it.
We made it. And, you know, a lot of shows were criticized for being, you know, doomsdayers and talking about how the season should or shouldn't happen and all
that.
You were very consistent. You said, let's give the NFL credit where it deserves credit. And here we are, having completed every game. You know, there were some bumps in the road, but we completed every game, and we have a full playoff picture ahead of us. So good job to those who deserve credit.
And we have a great playoff picture in front of us. 14 teams, one extra team per league, and as per conference today, to end up working great. So I'm ready to get into that. Again, Jeff Schwartz, Gabe Goodwin, Jeff Schwartz is smarter than you. I should probably mention the name of my podcast.
Yeah, people know.
Yeah, I hope they know by now. All right, let's get right into it. Okay, for the first topic, here's what I want to do. We're going to talk about the Eagles and this whole situation with tanking. I know that you portray like the Gabe Goodwin of the internet, of the Twitter. I want you to give me like your Gabe Goodwin, not Twitter personality, like how you feel about what happened at the end of the game.
Well, okay, so Twitter is freaking out because the Eagles appeared to basically tank in the very end of this game because they knew that they had no playoff hopes, and they essentially let the Washington football team into the postseason instead of the Giants, who had won it previously in the day. Everyone freaked the hell out. I've never seen takes hotter than last night when I thought, finally, we made it to the finish line, let's relax. And then the takes got even hotter than they'd ever been. My opinion is tanking is an understood part of every season of NFL football of my lifetime. Some teams disguise it better than others. What the Eagles seemed like they did on Sunday was pretty much no different than millions of other teams, including the damn Eagles and Giants and DC football team in the past. So I didn't freak out, but man, did everyone else freak the hell out, Jeff.
So yesterday felt like an example of, we like the sausage, but we don't like how it's made.
That's right.
Okay. We don't want to know how it's made. And we've talked about tanking for a long time now. And we always talk about it from the perspective of, it happens Monday through Saturday. Doesn't happen very often on Sunday. And we finally saw it happen on Sunday, and it pissed us off. Okay. There's a lot of things to break down here. So before the game, Doug Peterson, it was rumored, I don't know if he outright said it, but I got word Sunday morning this was happening. The line went from Washington favored by 2-3 to almost out to 7. Because rumor had it Nate Sudfeld was going to play in this game. The third string quarterback now. He realized actually still third string. Because they sat Carson Wentz. They sat Alshon Jeffrey. They sat sat Fletcher Cox, who was, you know, beat up but probably could have played. They sat an offensive lineman that was kind of concussion, maybe could have played. They sat Derek Barnett. They sat a whole bunch of guys. They started Jalen Hurts. And so rumors were before the game, this was going to happen. So the Eagles are kind of plodding along. Jalen Hurts, by the way, had 74 passing yards, excuse me, I think 72 passing yards and 34 rushing yards in three quarters after he was pulled. He was 7 of 20, okay? They pull him out of the game at 17-14, and comes Nate Sudfeld, and they lose. They straight up, they lose the game. So there's a couple things to talk about. It was a, in my opinion, a concerted effort to not win a football game. It wasn't tanking, I guess, if you want to use the word, fair enough, fine. It was a concerted effort to lose a football game or to not win a game. Kind of the same thing, right? But a couple things to consider here. First of all, the Eagles did try to win the game. They ran trick plays multiple times to generate explosive plays. They went for it on fourth down late in the game to try to take a lead and not kick a field goal. But in the end, the best interest for the team moving forward was not winning this football game because they get a better draft pick. They go from 9 to 6. And this decision was not made on Sunday. It was made with the front office and Doug Peterson together deciding during the week how they're going to approach this game. And guys, we should have known when they said Nate Sudfeld was going to play, they rest all the starters, this is how it's going to go down. And integrity of the game, cry me a fucking river, guys. Are you kidding me? Integrity of the game, bullshit. The Chiefs didn't play anyone. The Steelers basically handed the Browns a postseason, appearance this weekend, playing Mason Rudolph. They lost that game by two. Are you telling me Big Ben doesn't play, that they beat the Browns? Of course they beat the Browns. So Dolphins fans, are they upset? Do they have a right to be upset about this? The Bills pulled Josh Allen in the second half of that game. Yeah, they were blowing him out, but still took him out of the game. Could have lost that game, scored three times on special teams in the second half. Like, the idea that this doesn't happen in week 17 is just not how it goes. 2014, famous example. The Buccaneers were up, I believe, 20-3 in that game. The second half, they pulled everyone they could. Josh McCown threw it twice the entire second half, and they lost the game at number one pick in the draft. Like, this has happened before, except normally when it happens, it's at 1 p.m. It's the 1 p.m. game. It's not at 8:15 p.m. Eastern. It's not with Al and Chris talking about it for an entire quarter in front of national TV audience. It's not when they show Jason Kelce on the sidelines looking sad. And guess what? I played on a taking team before, a taking team that takes from the beginning of the season, the 2010 Panthers. It sucks. There's so many layers here. This is a decision made at the front office level. It's not a decision by the players. The Eagles players played hard, and I feel bad for them. It sucks to play for an organization that does not want to win football games. The only thing fun in this whole thing is winning football games. So yes, it sucks as the player, but guess what? We're not in charge of personnel decisions. It's not up to us whether they do this or not. And the Eagles, moving forward, are looking out for themselves. I see no problem in this. And Giants fans, you went 6-10. You beat the Cowboys, the Washington football team twice, the Bengals, the Eagles, and you upset the Seahawks. You have no right to talk about how you should have been in the playoffs if they won that game. You went 6-10. 6-10 in the worst division in maybe all of football history. One thing to consider here too, Gabe, is motives for why Peterson would do this besides just getting the sixth pick. How about this? How about this one? Guess who he coached in Kansas City for a couple years? Alex Smith. Guess who he probably knows pretty well? Ron Rivera. And guess what? He could hook him up with a playoff berth, or he could help out his rivals, the Giants. What do you think he'd rather do? Probably help out his boy, right? Alex Smith. Great story this year. Congratulations to them for winning the playoffs. Winning the game, whatever you want to say. They won the game. They're in the playoffs now. Like, there's so many reasons why this went down. And the moral outrage and like the Twitter mob and like the indignation of like, Doug Peterson, and guys, it's the front office anyways. Like, we're upset about the wrong person doing this. You know, the same people that advocate for tanking for the Jets, we joked all year about tanking for the Jets, right? Tanking for the Jacksonville Jaguars, no problem with it. Oh, it's great. So do what you should do for your organization. What happens in this game, it's integrity of the game. How do we do this? This year, Jacksonville decided to keep switching quarterbacks. I actually believe, and I wrote about this for Fox Sports, this is the best tanking job anyone has done in a long time. Because when you switch quarterbacks so often, you do not get in the rhythm, right? And when you don't get in the rhythm, you're not going to win football games. So they kept switching quarterbacks. They didn't play their best quarterback down the stretch. They lost a bunch of games. James Robinson, their running back, he said, I'm ready to play. I want to play this week. Guess what? Doug Moon's like, you know what? We'll wait till next year to play him. Now, he got fired today. It doesn't really matter. But, you know, like, guys, this happens all the time in Week 17, but because it happened on Sunday Night Football, it's like the worst thing of all time. There are so many people that I see that have advocated for tanking in the past that are so outraged by this, I cannot believe it. And a lot of people say, well, Jeff, you're a former player. You should be upset about this too. Look, guys, I as a player, I would be pissed if I was Jason Kelce or Zach Ertz. But I'm not. I'm a former player. I'm not playing on the Eagles anymore. I've been on a tanking team, guys. I know what this exact feeling feels like when your coaches do not give a shit. In 2010 with the Panthers, John Fox, he tried his best, man. Okay? But like the middle of the season, he's like, guys, I'm out next year. I'm telling you right now, I'm out. Just go play hard for yourselves. Get good film. All be fine, which he was. He went to coach the Broncos. All be fine, but go play your heart out. And we did. We played hard. But no one, our front office didn't care if we won or lost. They wanted Cam Newton in the draft. So you go out and play as a player. That's all we can control. I can't control Jalen Hurts or Sudfield playing. So I just think that the righteousness on Twitter, man, and it's hard. I've always seen me and Chris Long and TJ Lang, those three guys, the only three ex-players who are like, okay, they lost a game. Like, move it on. They're 4-11-1. We're spending so much energy talking about a 4-11-1 team game.
Yeah, well, I mean, by the way, if you tell me blindly, I can agree with you, Chris Long, and TJ Lang on a topic or the rest of Twitter blindly with you guys. I don't know what the topic is, but I like your logic. I'm with you guys. I do, though, want to push you on a little bit because this is where I think especially Giants players and passionate Giants fans started using some of the hyperbole about sickening and you know, embarrassment to the game. Some of the words you've said. This idea that maybe they would have, the Eagles would have preferred to help out the DC football team instead of helping out the Giants, who are even more of a rival for them. You know, Eli Manning is getting in there. Giants players are calling it sickening. Like, that does make me feel a little bit icky, I have to admit, that they would have a preference in which divisional rival they'd rather sort of hook up or help out. You, explain that to me a little bit, because that feels gross.
What, that Washington would hook up, the Eagles would hook up Washington?
Yeah, that feels a little icky to me.
Well, they're either hooking up one or the other, right?
I mean, I guess it's a bullet to your head. You got to choose one or the other. But the fact that the coaches are friends, or the, I don't know, some of what you said didn't sit totally right with me.
It's funny because I talked to someone who was very upset about this decision. I said, what if Doug Peterson decided I want to help out Alex Smith? And he would be like, oh, yeah, then I would have kind of been okay with that. What? And, all these people that are like, well, Doug said after the game they wanted to win. Is he's the first coach to lie in a press conference? First time ever a coach lied in a press conference. Like, are we doing this? Are we pretending that we don't understand how the NFL works? Like, I think the reason why I've gotten my media career to where it is, it's only been doing this for 3 years, is like, first of all, I don't care about social media. Like, I don't care what people say about me. But secondly, like, I don't have to be the mob. I can think differently than the mob. And like, this is a different situation. Like, guys, think about all the reasons why this was done. And you understand that it's part of what the NFL has always done in week 17, right? The Chiefs did not play anyone. The Browns, it's different because they have a playoff spot. Is it because the Eagles have nothing to play for? Chiefs have nothing to play for. Chiefs sat everyone. The Steelers basically gifted the Browns a playoff spot, guys. They sat Big Ben. They sat their best defensive players, and they almost beat them. Good for them. And I just, the right Giants fans, you went 6-10. If you're relying on the 11-1 Eagles to beat Washington to get in the playoffs, you shouldn't have blown a 2-touchdown lead to the Eagles this year. Like, come on, guys. I don't feel sorry for you. I'm sorry, I don't. Andy Dalton was driving down to win that game and threw that terrible interception, and you won the game. Like, you didn't even play that well. So Giants fans, I understand being upset. I get it. Be upset, yell and scream, tell me I suck, tell me that my career sucked and all the other crap you guys try to tell me. But like, come on, guys. It's your fault you're not in the playoffs. It's not the Eagles. It's not Doug Peterson's fault you're not in the playoffs. You're 6-10.
Yeah, also, to that point, a couple things on the Giants. Are the two most talented players on your offense, granted they've been hurt, but are you sure you tried to win every single game, every single week of the year that led to Saquon and Daniel Jones? Are you positive that every single snap of that season wasn't like what we just saw on Sunday? Also, you share a building with a team who we know was tanking and who everyone in the same city criticized for not tanking effectively. You know, like the knock on the Jets was, how did you blow it? How did you not lose? And here we are getting righteous about the Giants situation based on, like, it's hypocrisy. Well,
because you saw the sausage being made. You saw the Eagles purposely try not to win a game. And I know I'm going back to my playing career. We were playing 22-13. The Saints won the Super Bowl that year. No, it was 2009. Not the year we were bad. We were 8-8 2009. We're playing the Saints, and they didn't need the game. They had the one seed, and they played like Mark Brunell, and just like they sat Drew Brees, and they just futzed around and lost the game. And like, they just ran the ball in the second half. Like, all right, well, just ran the ball. You know, the Alex Smith offense, run the ball and throw your running back. Okay, that's a tanking game, right? Is that wrong, or is it just because they're the one seed, they can do that? Like, it just the picking apart, like, the very, feels like way too much outrage for the actual situation that happened. If you have to be like, well, it was the last 12 minutes of a game and they put something in and they did it, like, that feels a little bit too much for what actually.
Yeah. I wonder if, right. I mean, you can't do this. The NFL schedule worked out almost perfectly and beautifully this season. I wonder if flipping those two NFC East games would have changed the emotional sort of freak out that happened on Sunday. That if you'd ended with the Cowboys game, which, by the way, was a mess unto itself, and all the Twitter jokes were about that game earlier in the day until the Eagles game, would that have maybe solved some of this? Then the Eagles could have done whatever they did, but it would have come down to the final game of the year, helped decide the division, and maybe we wouldn't have this same level of freak out.
Well, that's my point, is if this happened at 1 p.m. at the early games, and this was at, you know, this ending happened at 4 p.m. Eastern, when kind of the witching hour, right? We talked about that witching hour. Mm-hmm. Now, it gets talked about for 15 minutes.
Right.
And maybe it gets talked about like Sunday Night Football preview, right? Like, oh, the Eagles try not to win a football game. And now it's set up for the winner of this game wins the game.
It would make it more dramatic.
Or,
that's right.
Or whatever it is. No, they would have played those games at the same time, too. They would have played both of them at 1 o'clock because they would have, you know, like they don't want to stagger those games. So this would have happened at 1 o'clock. And it would have like been like, okay, well, Washington's in. Congratulations. And I feel like this takes away from Washington. Guys, Ron Rivera had cancer this year. And he coached through cancer. Alex Smith, guys, do we realize what he's doing? Think about this. Think about taking your thigh muscle, removing part of it, and putting it into your calf, and then playing an NFL football game multiple weeks of the year. That's what he did, guys. He almost lost his leg. I think it's very fair to say that if he wasn't an athlete, he probably does lose his leg. But his wife said, don't take his leg from him. If that was you, Gabe, no offense, your leg's probably gone. The doctor's like, fuck, he's gone. It's gone. Like, you know what I mean? Like, do you see the picture? Like, it was, yeah. His leg was like, just the bone was there. Between the you know, the knee and the ankle. And he had the best rehab you could ever have at the Army Medical Center. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, he had to go get rehab at a place that treats, like, bomb wounds and bomb, like, in victims of bombings overseas. That's how bad it was. And he's playing, and he's come back player of the year, and he was in the playoffs. Now, look, Tampa Bay, maybe we'll talk more about it, like, they're not going to win a game probably, but it's a pretty cool story. Now we're talking about the freaking 4-11 1 Eagles.
We're so much luckier to have the DC football team in the postseason this year than either of those other three teams in the NFC East for all the reasons you just said. Jeff, I did run a marathon in my life. I've done a few triathlons, so I am an athlete, and I don't think it'd be fair to just take my leg, but your point is well made. You mentioned the Bucks playing DC. So, like, Bucks are a pretty big favorite, yeah. Even though they'll be on the road. We don't know exactly what that'll really mean. But, I mean, is there any hope? Chase Young looks vicious. You know, they seem like they can play enough D to stay in any game. But then again, Tom Brady is like the guy we've sort of maybe overlooked somehow in sports media. Haven't talked enough Tom Brady this year. It's almost a joke. Like, are you sure that DC can't pull this out?
You know, I talked to a Tampa Bay Bucks offensive lineman last night, and he's like, look, Washington football team, they're front seven, right? So their defensive line, their linebackers are elite. They're really good. But the rest of their team, and they obviously, I think they played them earlier this season. Or did they not play them this season? I don't know if they did. But he basically was like, yeah, like, you know, like that, like, we're going to win anyways, essentially. I mean, right? Like, that's what's good about them. And they're going to have to worry about it. Yeah, I mean, Tom Brady, when he loses playoff games, it's for that reason, right? They rush the passer. But offensively, man, the old name, the Washington football team, just Alex, bless his heart, man, but like he just can't move. And they don't throw the ball deep, and maybe Terry McLaurin will be healthier next weekend. But this is Saturday Night Football, right? They put Brady in primetime, no surprise, against Washington. I'm sure the NFL would have loved to get Brady and the Giants together for this game. That would have been a classic. We talked about that storyline the whole week.
They would have.
And that's one thing, too. The NFL, they said, was upset because the Eagles did this. People were like, they need to investigate. Sal Powell said they need to investigate Doug Peterson. What? The NFL's upset because they got embarrassed on national television. They're not upset the Eagles did this. They could care less what the Eagles did. They sucked at half a Sunday Night Football. And there was no, what better option for Sunday Night Football was there? The Rams-Cardinals game? Ugh, gross. There was no better option this week. Maybe Packers-Bears, I guess. But by that point, it was, you know, pretty much set. The Bears would have been in. Packers would just play for number one seed. There was no other option. So, I saw one guy, I know I'm tripping over, a sports business reporter talk about, like, there's a fraud case to be had here for tanking. What? What are we doing?
I think the other half of what's in people's Twitter timelines this weekend might be sort of giving them ideas of bigger conspiracies and bigger thoughts in their mind because of what they're reading about politics. That seems a little bit carried away. Listen, we know that they probably, tanking might not be the right word, but trying to win as hard as they could clearly didn't happen. It's time for people to get over it and accept that's how the reality works. Let's talk about the teams that are in for the right reasons, okay? Which are those other top seeds in the NFC. We mentioned Brady. But the number one is going to be Rodgers. We got Breeze and Russell Wilson in there. We could maybe have the four best quarterbacks of our shared lifetime playing, you know, in the next weekend of the postseason. I'm not sure any of them look like they'll lose. I want to say this, though, and this might be very unpopular take with you, the former offensive lineman. And I don't mean any disrespect here, but somehow the best offensive lineman in the game tore his ACL and is out for the year. And it appears to make absolutely no difference to Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers offense. I'm talking about David Bakhtiari, who's gone for the year.
Yeah.
And I just, again, he's a great player. He's probably the best at his position. It doesn't seem like it matters. Aaron Rodgers is that good, and I don't see anyone stopping him and Devontae in the postseason.
So it was a little bit different on Sunday, I should say. I mean, he got Billy Turner. I think Billy Turner played left tackle. He got it beat a couple times, but Rodgers just makes the play, right? Like, that's part of it. There was one where he got beat and Rodgers kind of stepped up, and as he's falling down, he hit Aaron Jones, like an Aaron Jones scrambled up the field for 12 or 15 yards. I'm looking at the NFC. Like, you have Carlos Dunlop. You have Cam Jordan, though, plays on the other side. But Trey Hendrickson's pretty good for the Saints on the left side. Like, there's not like that one guy where I'm like, they can't win that game because he's not there. And remember, this is the important part. We talk about this a lot. Is when you lose one offensive lineman, if you just replace him with one, then you can scheme up to help that guy. If you replace him by moving someone, and they were talking about moving Jenkins from guard out to left tackle, he played there earlier this season, that then you kind of have two positions that are weaker now. When it's one, Rodgers knows, okay, that's when I kind of have to like keep an eye on that one, right? So the Packers, man, I tell you this, I think they're the Chiefs from last season, right? They're ascending at the perfect time. Defense, playing well, forcing turnovers, getting stops. Offense, through the roof right now. Rodgers looked as locked as you can get. There's not much weaknesses. They feel like the favorite. And Lambeau Field, out of all years, home field advantage is very minimal. But Lambeau, especially with the Saints having to come to Lambeau. Are you taking Drew Brees outside in that weather to beat?
Hell no.
No. Now, Russell Wilson, fine. I'll take Russell Wilson. Even Tom Brady. Tom Brady played New England forever. That's a bad example. But, Tom Brady in the snow, I wouldn't.
Those old ass bones, man. Part of the reason he left is to get away from the cold. He doesn't want to go there.
And that's why I think Washington game, like, I don't know what the weather is this weekend in Lando. I haven't looked yet. But, you know, if it's a little cold and a little rainy and wet, I mean, it could be a sloppy game for Tom. So I do think the Packers, though, are, in my opinion, the favorite in the NFC. It's, like, pretty clear. But you mentioned earlier, divisional round, we might get Rodgers, Brady, Breeze, Wilson. I cannot imagine a better divisional round we've had in NFL history. I mean, those are, like, four Hall of Fame quarterbacks playing in the prime of their career in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, it's unprecedented. I mean, obviously we're all prisoners of the moment. I'll just say it. There's no possible way that we've had four absolute no-brainer Hall of Famers playing at the top of their game at the same time, where any of them, like you talk about networks earlier and what they're rooting for, the networks wouldn't even know what to root for. I don't know who you choose from. That's the most marketable bunch of guys you could possibly think of.
You would choose Rodgers, Brady for like the night game. That would feel like the marquee. You have the Tom Brady, like everyone hates Tom Brady, and against Aaron Rodgers, who, you know, people feel he's aloof and you know, doesn't a great teammate, all that stuff, which I've heard is not true at all. But nonetheless, it's really, can you believe that? Like, two guys in the media that played in Green Bay have pushed this entire narrative that Aaron Rodgers is kind of aloof and not a good teammate. But everyone else I've talked to is like, yeah, he's fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's how everything in life works, right? Like, a couple people get a microphone in front of them and state it, and then everyone else picks up on it, and it just becomes fact. It's the same, though, to be fair. It goes in reverse. All these guys are clutch. Well, the stats don't necessarily show that for every guy the same way, but we call all of them clutch because they did it once or twice in their past. Real quick, because I know you do most of the betting later in the week when you get on with Matt, but Packers, it's not just your opinion. Packers are the clear favorite. Saints come in second, Bucks third, Seahawks fourth. This is in terms of betting odds. Is there any value pick here? Is there any team that, I mean, we just said the Packers look like the team. Who's the next best?
Probably Seattle. Okay. I mean, you know, like, they're doing this thing where they just do enough again, right? They just do enough. I remember I really didn't watch much of the Niners Seahawks team. Did you find yourself overwhelmed this weekend with watching football? I felt a little overwhelmed, especially in the back half of the day. Like, I put that 8 box up on DirecTV because there were 7 games that were kind of important in the afternoon. Yep. And it was like Niners were bottom right. And kind of like, oh, the Seahawks are down 16-6. Like, what? And I was like, oh, they won. They just kind of, that the Seahawks thing. But Russell Wilson can still do it when he needs to. And they also seem to play better depending on the opponent. And the defense is playing better now, too. So the defense reminds me of a little bit of what they did in 13 and 14. And Russell Wilson, I would not bet against him in a playoff game in Lambeau, you know, to win the NFC. Now, going to New Orleans will be tough. But they just kind of play those ugly games and wins. I think Seattle, if you're looking for value, is definitely the team.
Okay. We did touch on Brady, but I want to mention his new buddy, Antonio Brown. It seems like, I mean, the uneducated take is it's clicking. His roommate is doing what he needs to do. They think they hit some incentives for Antonio. He's as happy as he's been in a couple of years. Mina joked. I saw Mina Kimes retweeted someone who was complaining that the sports media wasn't talking about Tom Brady this season.
Yes.
She said, yeah, you're right. We never talk about that guy. But I'll be honest, it kind of worked for me because I feel like at least for December, we kind of forgot about Tom Brady. You're saying Seattle is the value pick. You've liked the Bucs all year. They're one and done, kind of. Still, that's your feeling. They win a game, maybe even a second, but they're not getting past the conference championship.
Yeah, I feel like next year is that year. Like year two, if you look at like Peyton Manning, year two was better than year one. He went for 50 touchdowns, but next year it actually took him his third year there where he won the Super Bowl. I feel like year two with a full offseason, a full time to prepare, that's when they'll hit it strong. But look, they're hitting their stride. This is what we said. And it took about 4 weeks longer than I thought, but they're kind of hitting their stride now as the postseason comes. And they'll go to Washington. I think they'll win. What's the line for that game? I haven't seen it. 7, I would imagine.
I saw 6.5 somewhere.
Okay. It feels about right. 7. I think there could be a chance Washington covers that game. Like, I do think it's somewhere in close. And then look, go to Green Bay and see what happens. I think they're one and done, but I think they have next year. We'll see them ascend even more. And so they're doing the right things. We said all year, will they improve their offense? They're motioning more. They're doing play action more. They said Mike Evans just has a hyperextended knee, so I think he'll be back this weekend as well. You mentioned Antonio Brown. They gave him three shovel passes to hit his incentive. Integrity of the game, though. Integrity of the game. Integrity. We would never do anything whatsoever to alter a game plan, to change what we're doing at all, to help or hurt anybody. So Tampa Bay, please never do that again. Integrity of the game. Integrity of the game, please. Come on. Like, seriously, like, that's what we're, that's people, integrity of the game. Get out of here. Integrity of the game. Get out of here. Meaningless week 17 game.
You're laying the sarcasm on thick, but that guy has shown that he is not a stable person. So doing anything to keep him happy seems wise, and putting a few extra bucks in his pocket was smart thing to do. I'll save us the time. I was going to ask you if we have to talk about the Rams or Bears, both of whom sort of seemed like they limped into the playoffs. A few weeks ago, we thought the Rams might be scary. Can we just agree, like, those are two first-round losers, and that maybe they surprise us, but we don't need to talk about them. We've covered the rest of the NFC. It's time to move on.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, good. I mean, the Rams, look, just is Goff playing or not? I mean, that's – and then also, you know, the Bears, I mean, they obviously backed in the playoffs. Like, it is what it is.
I mean, they did what they had to do, so good for them, but it
doesn't did they? Seem like I mean, year. They went 8-8, and they lost to – they got blown up by the Packers. I mean, I guess so.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Well, we'll see if the financial analyst to be can win a game in the postseason instead of Jared Goff. We don't know if that'll have to happen. Let's talk AFC. Jeff, it feels like every week I've brought this up with you, and now I want to have a real, like, come to God moment. Just please admit to me that after seeing the last couple of weeks from Josh Allen and the Bills, you're kind of crapping your pants about facing them in the AFC championship. The Chiefs are obviously the favorite, but it's never seemed closer than Chiefs and Bills than it does right now. Be honest. You're worried.
Should I do the Nick Wright route and just stay strong with my Chiefs, or should I just give a little bit to the Bills?
I don't know. I love Nick Wright. I love the confidence he has, but yeah, I think you need to be humble.
The Bills look scary. They're playing some good football, man. Josh Allen in the red zone is out of this world. The Chiefs have the worst red zone defense. I haven't checked the updated stats, but they're pretty bad in the red zone.
Bad, and really bad. 32nd in the league is what I saw yesterday.
Yeah, okay, so they're still 32nd. So that's not good when you play the Buffalo Bills. Now, look, Buffalo had a defensive touchdown, two special team touchdowns yesterday, something like that. I mean, they had a lot of points that scored that weren't, you know, just because of Josh Allen. But, yeah, they look good. They're peaking in the right time. They're doing the right things. But I wrote this for Fox Sports. Their defense is getting better, but you know they played one offense that was ranked higher than top 17 in DVOA since week 9, which was Seattle. Like, they haven't played any offense that's better than 17 since week 9. So, like, you know, let's see the Colts. Phillip Rivers, are you kidding me? But the Colts kind of have the recipe to play that game close, right? They run the football. The Bills don't stop the run very well. You know, they play good defense. So, yes, the Bills out of all AFC teams worry me. The Ravens, man, I know people aren't down on the Ravens because they lost the last 2 years. They were favorites. I have not looked updated odds. They were favorites. They're still favorites. Okay. Which seems odd to have a 5-seed favorite over a 4-seed. But guys, the Ravens are kind of playing good football right now. And they figured out an offense that kind of spread things out now and run the ball kind of via a spread out formation, not so many tight ends. They're playing good football. They, to me, feel like a team, kind of the role reversal of last year, right? They get in, kind of sneak in. They go beat Tennessee, go to Kansas City. Game's pretty close. I think it's like Chiefs, Bills, kind of Ravens. Look, Tennessee, their defense, not good enough to win the AFC. And look, if the Steelers can play some offense, just some, they're not a bad pick either. Remember, they went toe-to-toe with Buffalo defensively already this season. They're just offensively, they couldn't do anything. And I think they beat the Browns. I feel pretty good about that, right? I mean, the Browns, Big Ben comes back. Like, they'll beat the Browns. Are you telling me that Pittsburgh doesn't have a chance going to Buffalo?
I'm not here to tell you that. I can't imagine a team looking as good as the Bills look right now.
Oh, they look great. I cannot deny that. Correct.
So the dark horse team there, you're saying, is kind of the Steelers? The 3-seed? Like, I mean...
I think it's like Chiefs, Buffalo, Ravens, Steelers right now. Now, the Steelers and Ravens could flip, I think. But look, the Ravens play the Steelers really tough this year. Like, the Steelers kind of got a break and skipping them in this round. I think they'd much rather play the Browns, which just might be a reason why they calculated, like, kind of trying to lose that game and figure out what that would do for them in the wild card round.
I wanted to ask you about two parts of that then. One, you know, we know the Chiefs obviously made the choice everyone would make and gave the key players a rest. Steelers, similar. Buffalo tried to win, beat a division team, kept them out of the playoffs, kept the Dolphins out of the playoffs. Does rest have any kind of impact on all of this right now? Do you think that it matters?
I think it definitely matters for Big Ben, who hasn't had a rest all season. Remember, the bye week is not so much missing your game on Sunday. It's not doing anything Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. It's that part of it. And they gave Ben, I would imagine, I didn't call the Steelers, but they gave Ben the opportunity, I would imagine, this week to do nothing this week, right? He didn't dress this week. He just like sat out this week. So he's probably going to feel good heading into this weekend, which is important for him. You know, they set out TJ Watt and they set out Cam Hayward and I think Stephon Tuitt as well on their defense. I get why they made their offensive line play. Because their offensive line, they're probably like, guys, like, come on, show us something. So, yeah, I think that really helped Ben. I don't think lack of rest will hurt Josh Allen. He's like 23 years old. I mean, he's fine.
I mean, he doesn't look stoppable. Like, his body looks like it's made for running around and getting hit by things. I don't see him getting hurt in any real way.
A Dave Damashek says this all the time, the sposta, right? The curse of the spostas. It's tough when you're supposed to win. I never put a name to that until he said that. And that's true, right? The Bills are supposed to win. They've never been in the spot before. The Browns this weekend were supposed to win. Almost screwed up. It's hard when you've never been to that. You know, the Chiefs, Patriots 2018, the Chiefs were supposed to win that game. They're at home. You know, Patriots won that game in overtime. So it's hard that first year you're supposed to do something. It's much easier the next season to do it. And for the Bills and for maybe the Browns this weekend, you know, it's not been there before. On the NFC side, all those teams have been there before, right? There's no like not been there. Even Alex Smith, he's played in many playoff games before. But the AFC side, the Bills are the one team who's not really been there. They were there last year, lost in Houston. I guess Baltimore's been 2 years in a row, but never been past the first round. Tennessee last year had a deep run. They should feel good about entering the playoffs or defense again. Whew. Congrats, by the way, Derrick Henry. Fabulous. Cool, right? Like I played on the Vikings with Peterson at 2,000 yards. Great. It's fabulous. Good for Derrick Henry.
It's great. We're going to get to him in a little bit more detail and moving the line, but I want to ask you one more thing that came up on Sunday that I feel like everyone had takes on. It sort of touches on everything we've discussed. So during the Colts game, they made a big deal on the broadcast about how they were taking the scoreboards down. Like, basically, they didn't want anyone on the field to know what was happening between Tennessee and Houston, because I guess they thought that would impact their play on the field because their playoff fates were tied to one another. Is that BS? Like, I bought it. I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. The players shouldn't know who's winning or losing. They should just play hard no matter what. But given everything we learned later in the day, like, is that nonsense? Is somebody just whispering to them what's going on in the other game anyway?
You text me this. I don't think so. I think they just played. No one
you
knew.
You think the Colts players just played their ass off trying to win the game, not worrying about
Tennessee? Who would tell them? Like, the strength coach on the sidelines has his phone out checking the scores?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Well, they didn't play the second half like it. I don't know. Turn the scoreboard off. I don't know. It's just like, it just feels like, look, are you telling me the Colts players would just played better or worse if they had known? Especially, look, the Texans were winning that game. They would have been like, oh my God, Texans are winning. Like, let's play harder. So I don't, to me, that's nothing. It's like.
So when you were on the sidelines as a player, you got all your information from like scoreboards and what was out in front of you on the field. There was no other person with a phone or anything else where you could learn something during the game.
I'm trying to think of a situation where I've been in where that was the case. I mean, in 2012 with the Vikings, we're coming down the stretch to make a wild card, and we had to beat the Packers in week 17 to get in. And we did. So like there was no scoreboard watching. It was win and you're in. 2008 with the Panthers, we were the 2 seed. So we were in. The Chiefs in 2013 were the 5 seed. So like that year, the Broncos beat us twice. That was Manning's first year in Denver. Like we were the 5 seed locked in week 17. I don't remember a time when I was scoreboard watching in week 17 like that. Like I said, we were fortunate in Minnesota to play the Packers, who we had to win and get in. We beat them, and then we lost them the following weekend. Actually, we played them 6 days later. So I don't remember a time when I personally had to scoreboard watch. Now, when I'm at a game as a player, I'm sitting on the bench. I mean, I'll look and see the score, especially like when my brother was playing, I'd be like, oh, let's look at the Browns score. Like, oh shit, they're losing again. Whatever it is, you know, like I would look at, but I never really paid attention to it. Like I wasn't ever emotional about a score that I saw. I might be like, oh, okay, whatever. And I just like continue playing. I don't have time.
It didn't change anyone's play on the field or strategy from coaches. No. Okay. Well, then that's probably why the Colts didn't want to know.
But I do think it's worth noting, like, the Buffalo Bills might have looked at the score of the Steelers game at halftime and said to ourselves, all right, they're down, you know, whatever it was, 21-12 or 21-10. All right, let's get Josh out of the game. I mean, like, that's maybe 5% of their thinking. Yeah. Like, I'm sure they did that in that moment, yeah.
It'd be foolish not to, which is a great way to end this first segment. Guys, stop freaking out about, like, the dignity of the game and the sanctity of the game. Every team is doing what's best for their team for this season and the future. So this, like, freak out about the Eagles, every team is doing their own calculus too, right? I mean, everyone should just be grown-ups about this.
Yes, thank you.
All right, let's move the line a little over-under game, give us a few things to bet on in the postseason. Not all these are real, but we'll take a quick break. I'll come back. I'll hit you with some questions you won't see coming.
All right, let's do it.
All right, Jeff, we're back. It's time for a little over-under game. Here goes. I want to talk MVP race. Don't get too confused by this. I want to know the finishing spots for the following guys in the MVP voting. Okay. Aaron Rodgers, over-under 1.5. So is he going to be number one or not?
Yes, that's not even a question. I think there's 50 votes, right? I think that's 50 votes. I think he'll get in the low 40s, and Josh Allen will get some as well.
Josh Allen sneaks in there to get second. He'll get the second most votes. Pat probably comes in third. That's what we're guessing.
Yeah, I think there's a chance maybe Derrick Henry, like a Tennessee Titans, someone, which is interesting. Ben Baldwin, who you guys should follow Works for The Athletic. He has a great website for EPA and some other stats for quarterbacks and offensive defenses. He broke it down today. He's, you know, I can pull up for a second. He said, you know, the value is so high on what Ryan Tannehill does. Here's expected points added, right? We talk about this officiating number. Ryan Tannehill this year on his dropbacks was plus 166. Derrick Henry for all his rush attempts was plus 31. So like the value is in Ryan Tannehill. Derrick Henry had a great season, don't get me wrong, but to vote him MVP, I think some might do it. He's going to win Offensive Player of the Year for sure. So I think it's like Rodgers in the low 40s and then maybe Allen and maybe one for Mahomes and one for Henry somewhere around there.
All right. Well, I was going to ask you about Henry over under 3.5. So you're saying you think he's probably the third place finisher with a couple votes. Let's just acknowledge the history here, though. So eighth player in NFL history with 2,000 yards rushing in a season.
I think he's the ninth time it's happened, though.
Okay. As far right? as I know, research I saw from Axios Sports, who does a really nice job with some bullets on Mondays, I think he's the first person to accomplish 2,000 yards rushing at all three levels of play. So he did it in the NFL now. He did it in college at Alabama, which is nuts. And he did it in high school. I think like every year he played in high school, obviously. Like who would have been able to tackle Derrick Henry as a high school kid?
That's almost more impressive he did in college. Like he doesn't even like that. You only play like 12 games.
I don't know how that's possible either. I don't remember 2015 as a season he ran for 2,200 yards. Maybe I'm getting this stat wrong, but it seems to me that Derrick Henry has gone for 2,000 yards at every level of football and is just a machine. And by the way, rushing leader 2 years in a row, which on the broadcast they kept saying like almost never happens. Kind of makes sense, right? Like this hurts. It hurts to get hit this often and to run this much. To do it 2 years in a row is really phenomenal. So we'll give him a third place MVP finish, and that's as good as it gets. What about Devontae Adams? Over under 4.5. Is he in the top five?
No. Is there a fifth place person?
I'm just wondering if Devontae Adams as a receiver, obviously Aaron's going to get most of the credit in Green Bay, but man, did he have a year. 115 receptions, 1,374 yards, 18 touchdowns. He didn't even play a full year, and he looks completely unguardable. Is that him or is that Aaron?
I would say, I mean, maybe, I guess the fifth. Yeah, I could see that fifth.
Okay. Well, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I'm wondering if the receiving year that Devontae Adams had is getting enough credit. Fantasy players recognize. Are we all seeing him as, is he just able to get open no matter what and any quarterback could find him 115 times? Or is Aaron Rodgers just that good?
Adams is, I saw this the other day, I didn't know this. He's a pretty unique route runner. So a lot of guys, you know, they hand fight to get off routes. He's so quick out of his break that he never has to do that. Like at least when they showed, this was Sunday Night Football against the Titans, right? Collinsworth like showed how he's in, you know, a split stance and he kind of just jumps into parallel and then goes either way. And he's like so quick in doing it that you can't get a hand on him. Unlike just running kind of straight and hand fighting someone. So he's an incredible route runner. Incredible.
All right. Well, we'll get to watch him in the postseason. Let's talk coaching. This is the time of year where, you know, at least for half the league, you're thinking about next year already. So I have right now five jobs that are either open or we know will be open. Lions, Falcons, Texans, Chargers, Jets. Okay. But I want to know over under 7.5 new coaching jobs next year, because, you know, maybe the Eagles, maybe the Bears. I'm not sure. There could be some other changes. Do we think there'll be more?
I believe Jacksonville fired their coach.
Yeah, we're counting them as moving on. Do we think there's going to be more coaching openings? And really what I want to know is, which of those jobs do you want?
Okay, so I'm glad you mentioned that. So Mike Tannenbaum just tweeted out a good graphic at Real Tannenbaum. He goes, here's the current summary of the NFL teams with head coaching vacancies. So the Jacksonville Jaguars have 2 first-round picks, 2 seconds, have $81 million in cap space, okay? And they'll get Trevor Lawrence, correct? The Jets have 2 firsts, 1 second, 2 thirds, $73 million in cap space. It's a great job. The Chargers, 1 first, 1 second, 1 third. I mean, like, you know, the normal, they kind of have a normal draft. $30 million in cap space. Lions, $10 million in cap space. Probably going to trade Stafford, right? I mean, it kind of feels like you're going to trade some guys there. Texans and Falcons are just terrible jobs, right? Texans, you're under the cap. I mean, you're $15 million over the cap. No first rounder, no second rounds. But you have Deshaun Watson, who's fabulous. He played really well again yesterday. And the Falcons' job is you're just underwater. That's kind of a rebuild.
That's not going to be a good job anytime soon.
I think the best job is the Chargers' job right now. You have a quarterback who you know can play. You have a defense with Derwin James coming back, with Joey Bosa, with Ingram, with the linebacker they drafted, Murray, right? The Murray kid. Like, you know this roster is good. And you play a tough division, sure, but every division, I mean, like, every division is tough. What's, like, not a tough division? That feels like the best job. That feels like the best job. And then if you want to do, if you, like, the Chargers feel like a job that's, like, you're ready to go, right? You land and you just, like, you take off and you just install your offense, defense, you just go. You're ready to win now. You know, if you want to take the Jaguars and Jets job, that's a rebuild, right? It's year one, you're 5-11, year two, you're 8-8, year three, you're 12-4. Like Buffalo, good example, right? You just kind of climb the ladder. Atlanta and Houston feel like jobs for coaches that just are getting their first coaching job. We might not have options. You're the Texans coach. I do feel like Eric Bieniemy, though, who's going to have options. He interviewed with the Lions and Falcons, I believe. I think he'd be great for Houston because they need an adult. They need someone who has been around the game, who has been around, you know, Andy Reid, obviously, for years, who played in the NFL himself, who can just mentor Deshaun Watson. Everyone will play hard for EB. He'll manage the program well. Remember, not every coach is calling plays and being like, you know, game day guy. Like, some guys just manage the team. They manage the team. I think EB is perfect for that job.
Okay, then I want to give you a few other pairings to consider. Obviously, I would like Eric Bieniemy to be the Jets head coach because I think he's the most exciting potential future head coach. And if we could find a quarterback, maybe Matt Stafford with him, and then draft a quarterback, maybe the Jets could one day recover. But what if he goes to the Chargers, faces his old team for the next decade, basically. It's Chiefs versus Chargers in the AFC West. He's already got the quarterback. I mean, it doesn't look like he needs much help, Justin Herbert, but give him a guy like Bieniemy. And like you said, isn't that, I think that the top guy in this class of future coaches could go to the top job, as you just identified. Doesn't that make the most sense, more even than Texas?
I don't think he would want to go play in the division with Pat Mahomes.
He just doesn't want to have to deal with those two losses a year.
He's like, I don't want to do that. I want to see, look, Eric Bieniemy does not call play. I mean, it's a very sensitive subject. He's part of the decision-making process for the game plan. Okay. Andy Reid calls the plays. Eric Bieniemy calls the plays into Pat Mahomes. He has admitted as much. Like, there's no surprise, okay? So that's why, like, I like Justin Herbert, right? I Oregon kid, like Arthur Smith or Brian Daboll, guys who call plays, who I've seen build up the offense on their own. Like, if I was a Charger fan, that's what I want for Justin Herbert. Again, it's no slight Eric Bieniemy, none whatsoever. Like I said, I feel like he's gonna be more of like a John Harbaugh, right? Like an overseer of the program and do a great job at that. But if I'm looking for a guy who has been a play caller, who has improved Ryan Tannehill and Josh Allen, Brian Daboll, and there's a connection between the Chargers GM and Brian Daboll as well. I think that might be where he ends up going. That feels like, just personally, I'm a Herbert fan, the best spot for him. I think Eric Bieniemy, to your point, Jets need an adult in the room, right? Need an adult in your room. The adult in the room, Texans as well. Falcons, not so much. I don't really, Dan Quinn was an adult. But Jets and Texans feel like the best spots for Eric Bieniemy. He will get a job this year. It just matters of where that job will be.
All right, last coach team combo. The one that everyone's connecting all the dots on is Urban Meyer to Jacksonville. They get the college kid. Urban's obviously popular down there because of his titles at Florida. So what do you think of that pairing? Do you think Urban Meyer would make a good pro coach?
I don't think he would do it.
Really?
No, I don't think so. He's got a pretty good job right now. Why don't we know? So if they go to Jacksonville, does he then draft Justin Fields? Like, what does he do there?
No, I mean, being
like curious.
No, I think he'd take Lawrence. I don't know. I mean, Fields looked great in that game the other day. We'll get to
I think they want him, but would you leave that job in LA to go coach Jacksonville? Or would you kind of wait?
It's not about me, man. Let's just be honest about who Urban Meyer is. He has left football and come back to coaching football multiple times now.
No, I think he'll coach football again. I just don't think he'll coach in Jacksonville. Like, well, I think that to me, look, he's coached at Bowling Green, right? I believe Bowling Green first. Yeah. then Utah, and then went to Florida and Ohio State. You know, Jacksonville's like Utah. It's like, you really want to go to Jacksonville? Like, he could just wait for USC or Notre Dame to open up.
I mean, it's NFL money. It's NFL. I don't think he's waiting for Notre Dame. I think it's going to be a few years for Notre Dame.
He doesn't need NFL. He doesn't need the money.
I doubt he needs the money, but he's clearly not. He's not just going for prestigious college teams, or he'd be the coach of Texas right now. They wouldn't have hired Steve Sarkisian if Urban Meyer would have taken the job.
How do you feel about that?
For another podcast. I guess what I want to understand is, we're going to talk Nick Saban and Nick Saban assistants, but I don't understand why, and Urban, I guess, is in this category, why having ever coached successfully in college football forever makes you somebody's top choice at some other program. Like, why is Steve Sarkisian the new coach in Texas? I don't understand that.
I think, you know, you look at what he did, I guess, at Washington, which they call him 7-win Sark for a reason, at USC. I don't know. I mean, Nick Saban ends up rehabbing guys. He's going to – Adam Gase might be hired as the OC there. He might rehab Adam Gase. I don't know. It feels like a very parallel hire to me. People have said they hope that Sark can develop the offensive talent that he did at Alabama. But is that Sark's doing or Nick Saban? Because that's just always a Nick Saban thing, right? Develop talent very well. It just feels a very lateral move to me. Are you taking Lincoln Riley or in that conference? Or are you taking Steve Sarkisian?
Yeah, everything you just said. So let me skip one of the over-unders I had, which was just to go over some records that were set in the NFL this year and go right into Saban. So I have this theory that Nick Saban basically is like a coaching rehab facility to get big names to then transition them to other jobs, to then have assets all around professional and college football. So there's all these people who are loyal to and owe him their success, and it benefits him. So actually, Nick Saban is just like allowing people to come in and like intern and kind of pretend they're making decisions for him. But really what he's doing is buying them for the future. So they go somewhere else and maybe they don't compete as hard on the recruiting trail against him. Or maybe he kind of knows what's coming when he plays against them in a big game. Or maybe they just, you know, don't try to screw him over like they'll screw over every other coach. Is there anything to that theory?
I don't think so.
I can't believe you even gave it that much thought. I like that you bothered to consider that insane conspiracy theory that Nick Saban is hiring guys so that in the future when they get rehired, they hook him up.
No, but I definitely think what he does is pretty smart, because what he does is he brings these guys in to be interns, right? And I think he just picks their brain and he learns more about football from all his different coaches, and he gets all his different opinions on how to do things, how to attack, hey, Adam Gase, like, where Clemson's shown a bunch of these pro level blitzes. Like, how do you attack them? Right. How do we attack this offense? Look, I think Gase is not a dummy. I think he's a terrible head coach, but he's been an offensive coordinator who's been okay in his career. And, you know, like, I think he brings these guys in and just like they picks their brain, learns more about football, having these coaches on his roster. And he's more than willing to do it. And it's actually it's smart. I like that he does it. I think it's really good for him to, you know, to try to see where these guys, you know, where they've been, what he can learn, how he can benefit from them being on their team.
Okay, well, then let's end on a college football over-under, which is we got the national championship set. It isn't necessarily what everyone predicted, but it looks like it's going to be a very good game. So I want to know, I'm going to skip ahead. I'm going to give Alabama a victory, even though probably I shouldn't, but I'm going to just give Bama a win. And I want to know, over-under, 1.5 more championships before Nick Saban tries the NFL again. There's a lot in that question.
I don't think he's not going back to the NFL.
You don't think he's ever going back?
No.
So how many more times is he going to win at Alabama? I mean,
until he wants to stop coaching or get a TV gig or something. I think he'll be really good on TV.
I don't think he wants to work on TV at all. I think you're more likely to see Bill Belichick on TV than Nick
Saban. I actually think Bill would be really good. He was great in that NFL 100 series too.
Of course, they know everything there is to know about football, but they just don't want to talk to people.
Bill was like talking about some 1940s guard. It was incredible. Yeah. Ooh, you know, I never thought about him going back to the NFL. I mean, I guess he's going to be 70-year-old NFL coach.
I don't think it's like a big thing that people are talking about right now,
does that kind of ruin his legacy though? If he goes to the NFL and sucks, everyone's like, and just kind of, he wasn't that bad with the Dolphins, but everyone's just like, it's kind of like he's a college coach. What he does.
I don't know. I think the legacy thing is all overrated. And the fact is, Nick Saban's legacy is pretty well cemented. And if he wins another one this year, we don't need to talk about whether he was the best college football coach of a generation. mean, that's obvious.
Yeah.
So does he want to try to win the next level? I don't know. He doesn't. He also doesn't need the money.
I will say, it was to me a college football real quick. It was very sweet to see Dabo Swinney lose.
Talk
all that shit all week and then lose. And like not even lose, get smoked.
Smoked. Absolutely smoked.
I felt his defense was horrible. I was so sad in my heart. No, I was not.
Jeff, you got a lot of important picks to make. You ended the regular season. You know, you maybe made people a few bucks if they used the right tip from you.
We were 40. We were 41, 40, and 4. I gave the wrong record on Wednesday. I'm sorry about that. We were I missed 1 week. I said we were 34 and 37. We're actually we're 37 and 39. So we went 4-1 this week. We had our best week of the year. We sandwiched 2 4-1 weeks, beginning and end. We did it. 41, 40, and 4. So this will be more fun for the playoffs because I can give more than just the five sides. Like we'll have props and totals and teasers and parlay. We'll do like the whole plethora of gambling. But look, I mean, look. For where we were this year, we were like 22 and 30 at one point. To finish 500 was a haul, and we did it, folks. We did it.
Well, it was a wonky season. If we bet the same units every week, we would have made a few bucks this year using your picks. So give us some good picks with Matt this week. I will catch up with you every Monday for the rest of the postseason while we finish the season out. But it's been a great regular season with you, Jeff.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun being with you guys. Great season. And we'll continue rolling. We've got big playoffs coming up. We got a lot of stuff planned for the offseason, by the way, too. We're going to have a lot of fun this offseason. So,
All
right, guys. Talk to you guys on Thursday. Have a great couple of days.